Hey, Mario Blandini here at Drobo. You're listening to the Home Tech Podcast on theaverageguy.tv.
Here on Home Tech, we cover all your favorite tech gadgets that find their way into your home, news, reviews, product updates, and conversation, all for the average tech guy. I am your host, Jim Collison, broadcasting live from theaverageguy.tv studios here in what was a really weird snow day. We had 2 inches of snow this morning when we woke up. It's all gone now, but May 2nd snow is weird. Here in Bellevue, Nebraska, and we post the show each week with world-class show notes out at theaverageguy.tv. If you have questions, comments, or contributions, you can contact the show. Send me an email, podcast@theaverageguy.tv. And thanks to those who are sending me those emails. We always appreciate hearing from you, especially if you have ideas on what we can talk about on the show. And you can find me on Twitter at Jay Collison or follow the show schedule on Twitter at TheAverageGuyTV. You can also join us for live chat during the show if you're listening or you're watching in the live stream viewer. It's actually this direction. Over there, if you just head over there, there's chat. Just log in, and there's a lot of good folks in chat. You can join us there. If you're watching us on YouTube and you're somewhere else than theaverageguy.tv live, head over there, theaverageguy.tv live. We have a player there, and if you're on YouTube, the chat is just right above you. So join us for chat. We got a bunch out there this evening, and chatters, we are glad that you are with us as well. Then I've been working real hard to get the video improved. Hopefully you notice it both on the live stream and on the YouTube. All right, we got a busy show tonight. Let me go through the cast real quick, and then we'll dive into the other show about laptops. Of course, all the way to the left, and the host with me every single week, Christian Johnson. Christian, how are you?
I'm doing very well, Jim. Out of classes and out of school, so that is great. And looking forward to doing some tech in the month of May.
Yeah, you've got a busy time coming up, and you'll be heading off for NASA for the summer and then off to college in the fall, right? I mean, that's all lined up and ready to go, right?
Yeah.
All right, cool. Well, I'm sure we're going to get a chance to talk about NASA more in the coming weeks as you get that done. We'll maybe do a whole show around that. So congratulations on graduation. I know the ceremony hasn't happened yet, but that's a big deal for you, and you're done with school. So congrats with that.
Thank you.
And then over to my right, John Stutzman. John, how are you?
I'm doing great.
Great. Good to have you on the show. Did I catch you in the middle of a bite?
I was in the process of posting a tweet. And I was on the Average Guy TV.
Oh, good. Well, keep posting.
Caught me in midstream, so I was, I was surprised. I was expecting you to go all the way over to Paul.
Good. In fact, if you're listening to the show, it's always good. Let folks know you're listening out here at theaverageguy.tv/live. John, thanks for joining us. And next to him, Kevin Schoonover. Of course, Kevin, we know Kevin. You did a bunch of live coverage with us during CES and joins us from time to time. Kevin, how are you?
I'm very good.
I want to say thanks for sending that memory out. If you've been following us over at the Facebook page, facebook.com/group/theaverageguy, you know that I got a big beefy server. It's really a Precision workstation, but I'm going to use it as a server. And Kevin, why did you just have memory laying around? I mean, how does that work?
We decommissioned some equipment at work and ended up with extra memory laying around, and we've been eating our own dog food of trying to upgrade things in labs, and even though old servers still run ESX5 fine, we're trying to do some more consolidation. So we just had kind of a pile of the old fully buffered stuff laying around, and there you go.
Well, that's awesome, because when I bought the laptop, or when I bought the workstation from work, Gallup sold those to their employees for $25. They all said, oh, yeah, we'll put 4 gig in it, but that's all you're going to be able to get. That memory's super expensive to get anywhere else, and you're never going to find it. And so I get home, and that night, Kevin's like, oh, yeah, I got a bunch laying around. I'll just send it to you. So, Kevin, thanks for the memory. I appreciate it.
Absolutely.
And then all the way to the right, and, of course, Paul has been on the show many times before, and a guy who goes back with a lot of equipment, a lot of ways, and most excited because he's a road warrior, Paul Breran. Paul, how are you?
I'm great, Jim. It's good to be here again tonight, and looking forward to an exciting May. I've got a couple of, if anyone lives near Boston, I'll be presenting twice this month, actually.
Oh, nice.
So, my home lab and virtualization in VMware and Hyper-V. Coming up May 14th right here in Hartford, Connecticut area. Anyone who lives near me, come visit my site, tinkertry.com. It's all listed right there. And then finally, Security B-Sides Boston, a Saturday coming up at the Microsoft Nerd Center in Cambridge, Mass. I'll be there. So come and join me. I'd love to meet some folks. If anyone lives anywhere near me, that'd be great.
All right. Awesome. Yeah, that's how folks get a hold of you. Sorry, the video wasn't switching, so I apologize, chat. Thanks for letting me know. That's why I need a producer. But anyways, yeah, Paul, that sounds cool. You got some stuff coming up, and if you're in the area, say your site again. Where could I find it? Where's the one place I could go to get all that information?
Yep, just tinkertry.com. And right there in the main page, you'll see Super Guides and Podcasts. That's basically what I'll be talking about today.
Awesome. Very cool. I wish I lived closer. I'd come out and see it. Of course, we are all going to get together on September. Is that 21st? I hope I'm getting that date right.
It's 21st.
September
21st. Saturday 21st.
Indianapolis, Indiana for the third annual, I guess we'll call it, third annual Home Server Show Average Guy Meetup. Dave McCabe and I will be sponsoring that, and all that is up and running. I'll leave a link in the show notes. Most of you guys listen to the Home Server Show anyways, and so you're well aware of it, but I'll just mention that out here. There'll be a link to that to get signed up. We already got 11, and we haven't even planned any. We don't even know we're going to meet. we don't have anything set in stone yet, but you might want to get that on your calendar. September 21st out in Indianapolis, and if you're anywhere within 10 hours drive, you have to come. It's just a requirement. Because that's what I drive to get there. So we'd like to see you there September 21st. And Sarah's probably learning about that for the first time as she's upstairs listening to the show. I don't think I mentioned to her that the Home Server Show meetup.
But maybe she'll want to come with you.
Ooh, that'd be a good idea. Yeah, I'll have to figure out what to do with the kids that weekend. They'll party if we leave. So, well, let's dive right into laptops. Kevin, I want to start with you. And I know you've got a ton of notes here. But why don't you tell me a little bit about what you're currently using, maybe a little bit of history of what you've used in the past, and let's just work through your notes.
Sure. So, you know, and I guess from a discussion, I was thinking work and home, so I'll probably kind of talk about both. I don't have a lot of control with the IT department at work, but I do have some input there. My whole thing with mobile devices, and you know, a few years ago, you know, tonight I'm working from my desktop computer, but a few years ago I had really gotten off a desktop, had gone 100% with laptop, and to me it's understanding your use case, understanding what works for you, and understanding how best to, you know, get your compute environment up and going. So lots of choices out there. One of the things I seem to have done for several family members and friends is the much maligned and much hated 17-inch desktop replacement. And I think, Jim, you mentioned on last week's show, that is not a laptop for somebody who wants to travel. And I travel a lot for work. I couldn't imagine traveling with that. But when my wife wanted a computer, that just made sense. And the idea of having it replace her desktop, be something she could put on the kitchen table and do. She has to do Citrix into the county that she's working for right now for remote access, and it just ends up being a great product for her. For a lot of folks, it's probably, you know, too large, too cumbersome. The other thing I find with that desktop replacement kind of market is I have a friend who's a photographer and a friend who does architecture work, and I stumbled onto a few years ago that several of those bigger 17-inch laptops, they actually have spots for two disk drives. So you can put a SSD in there for performance, put a large drive in, load them up with memory. They got good-sized graphic cards, and you know, they tend to work out well from that point of view.
So, Kevin, when you're saying laptop replacement, I mean, what you're saying is, so you're purchasing these 17-inch laptops knowing they're really not going to go anywhere, right, for the most part. They're going to sit on a desk. You might even attach a second or a third monitor to them. For dual screen use, or plug them into a docking station of some kind, but really it's going to sit stationary most of the time, right?
Absolutely, and that most of the mobility of it is actually moving around the house more than moving around anywhere else.
Sure, yeah, because I was lugging. I mentioned last week I'd gotten this big 17-inch Core i7 laptop, and I thought it'd be really cool, but I move around so much at work. I was picking that thing up. I never shut the lid. I carried around like a waiter with food, and it just gets heavy. You know, after a while, you're just kind of like, oh, geez, this thing was a lot heavier than that little, like a 14-inch screen to begin with, 14, 15. That thing was just super light. So, okay, so just leave it leave it there. And like I said, I've seen this too on some of those bigger ones. Second spot for another hard drive, which is really cool.
Yep. And for the friend who does the architecture stuff, the drafting, and the photo photographer, works out great. They take it with them, you know, when they're going out to see clients. It's just like carrying their desktop right with them, and they really don't take a performance hit either. You know, from a personal basis, from my point of view, I've kind of gone back to a desktop, and my mobility ends up being my Surface RT. You know, it's a consumption device. I really don't do a lot of creation on it, although this week I have, because my work laptop has died, and it's somewhat amazing what you can actually get done with a Surface RT. Back to that use case thing, from a work point of view, lots of engineers on my team, and the one consistent factor with all the guys is processing performance. They run VMware Workstation on there. They do a lot of demonstration activity, so they got a lot of VMs queued up on their machines. Much, you know, high memories we can get in them, 8 to 16 gig and i7 processors. But the arguing factor amongst the guys is back to that screen size. And, you know, initially we had to be in like a 15-inch screen to get the performance and get the memory capacity. And now from Dell and from HP, and I believe from Lenovo as well, we're able to get that in a 12 or 13-inch as well. So we're kind of making that shift. From a work point of view, I'm all about getting my travel as lightweight as possible. Next week when I get back from my conference, I should have a new Dell Ultrabook for my main work computer, and I've already done the calculations on it. My old Lenovo T400 weight-wise will be the same as this new Dell and my Surface RT. So I'll basically travel with both devices. I'm trying to keep things, personal stuff on my personal device, work stuff on my work device, try to keep the two separate, but I want to keep the load down, and things are looking good from that point of view.
Kevin, aren't we really getting to the spot, though, where, okay, so my example I just said a minute ago, 17-inch Dell, Core i7, probably from 2 years ago, pretty big beast. We're starting to see some pretty thin, pretty light, kind of plastic, but you know, the heat's come down, the processors have gotten cooler, they've gotten more efficient, batteries have gotten better. Can't we see some 17 inch that are really thin and very light?
Oh, I you know, a totally other topic area, but think about the new XPS 18 from Dell. The you know, it's an all-in-one, but really it's a tablet, and that thing is outrageously light. So, yeah, I think you're going to start to see a market for 17-inch, especially with some of these magnesium alloy frames that they're able to put in them now, be extremely thin and extremely light. And you know, with Haswell coming on, the processing performance, you're not going to need as big of fans. Cooling's not going to be as heavy. So yeah, from a technology point of view, I think we can keep pumping up into those workstation-like laptops and actually get the weight out of them. It'll be interesting to see if the market, you know, drives and helps demand that.
Now, you guys can jump in on this if you want, but in chat they're saying, like Lopta's saying, wouldn't a 17-inch be, you know, you think about that 17, 18 inches thin tablet style. Isn't that just by nature, that screen kind of flimsy? I mean, wouldn't you expect some issues with it?
You know, the thing I'm noticing from it's the way they build the frames now and the materials they have to build the frames out of. I haven't had a chance to play with the new Dell yet, but I think that'll be kind of telling. And every review I've read about that is it's very, you know, strong, well built. Everybody comments on the build quality. So, and I think they're doing a lot to take care of those issues. But yeah, 17-inch panel is a pretty good size panel to have flapping on top of a laptop in a thin case.
Yeah, and Canadian Geek in chat also says with some of the carbon fiber units they're building, you know, it's just adding some strength to it. So that's still a lot of glass to break, you know?
that it certainly is. So, you know, some of the other things I guess I've looked at, you know, those are kind of examples of just my consultative aspects. But I think the average user has to, you know, we seem to be in the whole Windows 8 thing has a lot of the media responding negatively that, you know, there's fragmentation and there's all this stuff. And to me, it's great because it's a lot of choices. And, you know, I think you just got to get out and play with some of these devices. I always look at, what are you going to do with the thing? Grab a piece of paper and write down why you want a mobile device. What are you going to do with it? Is it mainly consumption? Is it mainly creation? Is it a bit of both? Are you a road warrior? Do you want something really lightweight and very functional? You guys had a great session last week about Chromebook, and I agreed with what you were talking about. Is when Chromebook first came out, I was like, oh god, just what you need is a stupid netbook. You know, netbooks were okay, and now we're going to have this Chromebook device. And the more you look at the use case for it, those are great. And Nathaniel's points about schools and Chromebooks, you know, phenomenally good stuff. You look at the hybrids now, you know, what's going to win out? You know, the flips like the Yogas, the twists like the Revolve from HP and the Twist from Lenovo, the splits. You know, there's lots of choices from that point of view. And then you kind of come down to the whole thing about touch around the Windows 8 tablets, but laptops themselves. Is it really important to have touch on the screen? This week, with using my Surface from a work point of view, I picked up one of the Logitech T650 trackpads, and pretty impressed with that. That really kind of makes the Windows 8 desktop experience when you're working off from two monitors. I'm extending the desktop to my bigger monitor, and that T650 seems to, you know, make that world kind of come together as well. So that's worked out real well.
Yeah, you know, you talked about the Chromebooks. If you're just listening to this show for the first time, go out to HT for Home Tech, HT114. And Nathaniel does a nice job of talking through the Chromebook issue. And Kevin, to your point, in schools, those seem to be just dynamite. I mean, he was talking about the battery life all day. You can just plug them in and set them up. Almost to the point where at the end of the show, Christian was trying to talk me into giving away a Chromebook as one of the things we should give away.
I thought he had.
He might have. Well, and you'd also, Kevin, mentioned the Yoga. Paul, I know you've got a Yoga in your house, right, at this point?
I do, and another one in the extended family as well.
Okay, yep. So we'll talk about that here when we come up to your turn. And I know Mike Howard has one, too, that we're going to talk about in 2 weeks. So no show next week, but in 2 weeks we're going to talk about that, and that is coming that way. So that Yoga seems to be one that seems to maybe be catching on a little bit. So
it is, you know, and I'm definitely kind of throw myself in the HP fanboy category, but I have to admit that the Lenovo's really leading this charge, where a lot of the other OEMs have kind of, I don't want to say begrudgingly, you know, they've drugged their feet a little bit around some of the new generation laptops and the Windows 8 products, and Lenovo has just jumped in. You guys talked about Helix last week. That's a phenomenal bit of engineering. And, you know, I think at the end of the day, the interesting, people keep batting around that sales are down on desktop PCs. Well, that was happening before Windows 8. The interesting thing when IDC and Gartner throw out these numbers now is average selling prices of new laptop purchases are up, because people are buying better, nicer, you know, and people aren't just running out and buying the $300 15-inch Celeron-based laptop. They're going out and buying something with a touch screen, with more performance, with maybe a flip or a twist screen to it. And, you know, the average selling prices are pumped back up into the, $500 to $700 range. So people are buying, and I think as people... I just have this feeling that when Blue comes out, and I hate to say fixes some issues, but resolves some issues with Windows 8 that maybe users have had an issue with, and we hit into the next generation processors of Haswell and Bay Trail, I think that's going to be, you know, right now we're in this transitional phase, and the next set that comes out is going to really bring a lot of this stuff together.
You mentioned in here, Will, Windows Blue or Service Pack 1, whatever we want to call that for Windows 8, Windows 8.1, whatever they're going to call it. You know, you've been using this. Do you have high hopes for it as far as it kind of fixing some of the issues that Windows 8 created?
You know, I've probably been thinking about it mostly from a workplace point of view. And Windows 8, the only thing that troubles me a bit today about Windows 8 is multi-monitor support. And that's more of a tech enthusiast and kind of more of a work environment. You know, sometimes that comes into play when you throw a device into a docking station, how well it either extends or duplicates. And from everything I've heard from folks who've dug in pretty heavily with Blue, Blue seems to resolve issues around multi-monitor support. And it seems like if I rattle through a list of concerns I might have about recommending Windows 8 to a novice or an average user, Blue seems to resolve most of those in my mind.
Okay, yeah.
Kevin, can I ask you a quick question about that?
Yeah.
And those stories about Blue and what it fixes, are they specifically talking about Metro or the modern UI, forgetting what monitor was on when you went to sleep? In other words, you have multiple monitors, you close the lid, come back the next morning, and you've got Metro UI in the wrong desktop, and now you got to click and fix it. Is that specifically one of the bugs you heard?
That's one of the bugs. When I was doing a little more playing with multi-monitor, I experienced that. And from what I'm hearing from folks who've tested pretty heavily with Blue with three, maybe four monitors, that was one of the things they found is things you could leave things pinned down much better on the monitor choices.
Nice. Okay, thank you.
Lopta also says that one of its clients bought a Windows 8 laptop. Showstopper was that the printing was having trouble because there were no Windows 8 drivers for that particular device. I haven't heard that before. Any of you guys experienced printing issues with Windows 8 before?
So no.
All ahead, my John. Devices go to the printer.
So yours work, John.
And mine are all Windows 8.
Okay. And what's your printer, though?
It's an HP. It's an HP 6000 wireless.
Fairly new?
It's like 2 years old.
Okay.
I can get into it remotely from my laptop and any of my machines, actually, and any of my servers, VMs, I can get into it. So I don't have any problem.
Yeah, I haven't either, but again, I use a wireless HP 7410, which is even older. It just finds the drivers and installs, and although I don't, I don't do a lot of printing anymore. I really try not to. I'm trying to get away from that. So Lopta also mentions the user experience. It's a user who didn't really like Windows 8. I don't blame him.
I set up a Windows 8 machine for my sister, and I used a printer that my brother had that he could never get to work. So it was like 6 years old, and I set it up and got it. I didn't know that I guess that there was that much of a problem. I went to the HP website, pulled down the drivers, and the thing worked. And that particular printer, I can't recall the name of it offhand, but it's been out of production for quite a few years now. But there were drivers, pulled them down, loaded it up, and the thing worked. So I
think it's been spotty, though.
I think it's isolated. I never thought of it as a real problem.
Yeah, Paul, what are you showing us there?
I was just showing a multiple monitor setup.
Oh, okay. Well, let me.
That was actually Windows 7. That photo's about a year old. I've changed things a little, but yeah, I've got a 2560 by 1440 in the middle, and that was a bit of a challenge on a laptop. And then the left and right side. Currently, I've got two 22-inch 1080p 1920 by 1080 screens. The proportions and everything works out great. So
now,
I know
you're using Windows 7, though, right?
Well, no, that picture's old. I'm on Windows 8 for a good 8 months now. Okay. That picture's about a year old. Okay. So, yeah.
So you're driving that same setup with Windows 8 right now?
Yeah, if you've clicked on that picture showing it, you'll see there's actually a fourth monitor that was an iPad I was borrowing at the moment. So an iPad could have been used as a Display Link fourth monitor seamlessly and just drag stuff out of the desktop. It was pretty cool. But Display Link has since dropped support for that. So I'm back to three screens.
But I would agree that Windows 8 and multi-monitors is still kind of rough. You know, it's kind of messy. I don't like it. I love Windows 8, and we've hashed this out. So I'm gonna actually end this Windows 8 conversation right here because we've talked about this ad nauseum. But with 8.1, I think it will be interesting to see what improvements come with it. So I think that with some new hardware that's coming, Kevin, I think that's one of the things you're saying. I think with some of the new hardware we're starting to see, I think we may get a little bit better user experience going forward with it.
I put up a screen share of my three monitors, and that's running Windows 8.
Okay. And John, your experience on multi-monitor?
I love it.
Oh, okay.
The only difference between on those three monitors, the one on the right, I've now turned it because it's a Samsung 21.3T, and it's a higher resolution monitor. And by turning it, it makes a great document monitor.
Sure.
So I have the documents on it, and also you in the center is my wallpaper. That's my wife and I and our grandson several
Very
months
nice.
Ago.
So, Very nice.
But anyway, that's what I've been using, and Windows 8, I think it's great. And the only thing I think that would be a benefit in my mind is if there was a way for Windows 8 Enterprise, if an entity can set it up so that you could go directly to desktop for the enterprise customers. And I think that should be a minor fix.
Yeah, I think that's coming one way or another. I think that that is coming. Let me bring this back around to the laptop. Kevin, I want to start it with you in the sense of, and this is for all three of you at this point, or all four of you with Christian on the side. Docking stations. We don't talk a lot about docking stations. I don't hear anybody talk about them very often. You know, I carry the laptop. I don't have a docking station at work. I just plug my laptop in. I have a little stand, and I plug the second monitor into the side of it. But I know there are docking stations out there. Are they worth having? Is it something, Kevin, let me start with you. Do you use an external docking station for a laptop? And blow it out with some monitors, or how? What's your preference?
It used to be that's kind of the way we went. And my company's IT department is still very docking station driven. They just feel that's a better user experience. But I think the thing we're finding is docking stations are rather expensive. The one nice thing for like the engineers on my team, the HP docking stations give them the ability to run two monitors off the dock and a third monitor straight off the laptop. So there are some nicer add-ons that way. But with the advent of USB 3, now, you know, this wouldn't support gaming, but Targus and Pluggable and some of these guys are building these USB 3 based docking stations that have a couple of video chips in them. So you get USB connected. So with one connection, you can actually drive a couple of monitors off that. Now, definitely, it's not going to be outrageously high resolution, and it's not going to be, you know, gaming quality video. But for a business case, I think that's becoming more of the trend. Is if I can just plug a USB 3 cable into the side of my laptop and add a couple of monitors to it and control all that, that's a pretty cool thing.
Because that'd make a really nice, you talk about the desktop replacement, and if you got the nice laptop and then you got the monitors coming off of it.
Yep.
We purchased some docking stations at work. I think they're between $65 and $99, let's say. So for about $100, you could blow it out to two monitors plus the third one being the laptop. So that created kind of a nice environment. So not too terribly expensive. Paul, you're showing something there. Let me kick over to you. What are you showing?
Yeah, I was just listening to the Surface Geeks podcast, and they're talking about docking stations, and what you can do over USB 3.0 is remarkable. So last June, I received my two-month back order of this Lenovo ThinkPad USB 3.0 dock. Don't let the name fool you. It says Lenovo brand, fine, but it'll work with any old PC, desktop, or laptop. Even works with Mac and Linux. I tested it on Windows 7 and Windows 8. Works great. It's about $150 on Amazon, and I wrote up a super guide here. So if you look at tinkertry.com/USB3DockSuperGuide, or in this video, you'll see it. There's a close-up picture I took of the back. You're looking at two DVI D ports. Why is that interesting? Well, you can crank them all the way up to 2048 by 1152. So if you look at my screen here, this is how my desk is arranged now. Giant screen in the middle, 27-inch, 2560 by 1440. and then two screens flanking. Just one of the monitors is run by the stock. So USB 3.0 is not doing much. I've actually tried it on USB 2.0, and it can handle it quite well. Like Kevin said, I'm not gaming, but for scrolling through Excel, through watching HD video, no stuttering, no tearing, no visual artifacts, it works beautifully, and here's how it's wired. So if you just, I'll leave that picture there for a moment, Jim. And up at the upper left corner is the dock. It's basically an ugly bunch of wires sticking out the back of it. It's a small little hub, if you want to think of it that way. It's tiny. And I do have a traditional docking station you're seeing in that picture. Why? Because I needed that DisplayPort cable for the full 2560 by 1440. That's a rare resolution for a laptop to support. So forget 27-inch. The average 24-inch rig, like three of them, none of this is a problem at all with any laptop that's made in the last 2 years. Wow. That's the take-home message. I don't want to make this more complicated than it needs to be with a high-res monitor in the middle.
Wow.
But, yeah. Yeah, there it is. That's $150. Yes, it's more expensive than some other brands, but it has two outputs, so that gives you more flexibility for future growth or whatever you might do. In that picture you see, I actually don't sit near my laptop. I don't want the noise and the heat. That's further away from me. My three monitors are in front of me. This thing's humming along behind me 7 feet away. So there you have it.
Nice.
In this guide, too, I have a bit of an unboxing and a going over of the install experience. But on Windows 8, it's gotten pretty darn easy. So yeah, hey, glad you brought up docking stations.
Yeah,
they really help for productivity.
Any other thoughts? Christian, for you going into a dorm room, any thoughts of a docking station to drive your future laptop?
Yeah,
use it that way?
Yeah, the Lenovo ThinkPad Helix has a really nice docking station that's USB 3 that supports two external monitors, so that would be pretty...
So you're keeping your eye out for that, are you?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Well, interesting. Any other thoughts on docking stations? We just don't talk about them very often, but they are certainly out there.
I'll mention the corporate world with cutbacks and expenses. I can't even expense docking stations anymore, so frankly... there's a great deal of appeal to being able to keep this. Just buy it myself and keep it with whatever brand I hook up to it. So you can imagine a shared guest cube with a giant monitor, say. You just plug your laptop USB 3 into this and you borrow it. It's not a big deal, right? Rather than a proprietary docking station, it's just one USB 3.0 connection. That's it.
Yeah, right on.
So that's pretty cool, yeah.
All right, Kevin, you're still on the docket here. Anything else you want to cover?
Kind of bouncing all over the place here, yeah. But when I'm helping friends with laptops, you know, one of the things that I do like from Dell, Lenovo, HP is, and I think some folks ignore or get concerned about the number of updates coming through. You know, Windows does its updates, and HP, I feel, has a pretty good tool that updates their own software. And one of the things I've noticed is, you know, it'll prompt you about BIOS upgrades. And I always tell people, update the BIOS in your laptop early and often. And the reasoning is a lot of the thermal characteristics and a lot of the fan control and a lot of other things about a laptop is controlled by the BIOS. So if they find, especially if you just bought a brand new model, you'll tend to find that if they've run into some thermal issues with it, and this happened on my sister-in-law's laptop, it would get a little bit unstable if she had it on her lap where the air cooling probably wasn't as good as it should be. Prompted to do a BIOS update, and the thing she noticed is it runs cooler now, it's a little louder, and you know the fans are running more often. So they changed some of the thermal characteristics that way. So I always tell people, you know, keep them clean. You should really vacuum out the air ducts on them to keep the dust out of them. But the BIOS one is one, I think a lot of folks have this feeling about BIOSes is, if it's not broken, I shouldn't update the BIOS. And on laptops, I just find it important to, if the vendor's got a new version of the BIOS out, go ahead and update it.
Christian, how much laptop action do you guys see over there at bios-mods.com?
Mostly,
a lot of stuff there?
Yeah, we get guys who use the the whitelist mods a lot when they want to put in wireless cards that are being whitelisted by the manufacturer, so we take those out. And there's also a fair amount of, most of the laptops now are running either the new Phoenix platform, whether it be UEFI or not, or the inside BIOS platform, and we modify both of those to do option unlocks for whether it's overclocking or underclocking or whatever. There's a fair amount of laptop overclocks, so, or modifications,
yeah.
Rather.
Okay, yeah, and we haven't talked, Paul. We haven't talked about BIOS-mods in a while, but that site's humming along, and if folks want, if they've got laptops and they want to be a little adventurous, this is probably not average guy stuff, but if they want to be a little adventurous, they can head over there. Pretty big community going on around there, and you can get some things if the hardware is not supported in the BIOS. Oftentimes, if they can make it work, those guys over there can get that working for you, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, very cool. Paul?
Yeah, I was just going to add, well before I met Krishna and heard of him on this podcast, yeah, mods really come in handy for some out-of-warranty stuff. So you got a laptop. It's 7, 8 years old. You don't want a USB dongle sticking out the side for Wi-Fi. You can get a $30 eBay card. It's not normally going to work in that laptop unless you tweak the BIOS. It's that simple. No one's talking about warranty. This is ancient junk that's going to sit in a shelf and do nothing, perhaps. It can be really useful. And I'll leave it at that. So I've heard.
Very cool. You're very careful to say out of warranty, right? But
exactly.
But Kevin, to your point, updating your BIOS does not take it out of warranty, right? I mean, it's
right.
Yeah. Oftentimes, the manufacturer supports it. That's what they're doing, right?
And I notice with a lot of the Dell and HP are probably the ones I have the most experience with. Their built-in software tool, as long as you leave it active, it'll prompt you to do updates. And BIOS updates have gotten so easy now. You know, they do them in flight. You know, used to have to do them during the boot cycle or sometime other than normal runtime. And now they're just easy to do and probably, you know, more important to do them than say on a desktop.
Christian, has modifying the BIOS has gotten easier as you know, we've gotten further on with more advanced hardware, or is it getting more difficult for you guys to modify the BIOSes?
Really, everything up until, I mean, the real kind of progression was Award and AMI was the big area, and people struggled with the Phoenix and Inside platforms for a bit. Now those are pretty well understood and are modifiable. And now, obviously, the big problem we start running into is these UEFI BIOSes have really complex, some of them have encryption, some of them have these GUID modules that when you actually, even if you can decompress and unencrypt them, when you break them down into the 200-plus sub-bins they are, I mean, your traditional non-UEFI BIOS, you're maybe dealing with anywhere from 20 to 60 like sub-ROMs that make up the BIOS image that you flash to your machine. But now it's just spiraling out of control with UEFI, where it's really hard to tell what ROM is responsible for what in the UEFI platform. So I'd say we're pretty solid up until UEFI, and then it's hit or miss from there.
Gets a little more complicated.
Yeah, I mean, there are some tools that we have that can do UEFI and make heads and tails of it, but to be doing some of the manual customizations that we do with the other stuff is pretty tricky.
And I assume UEFI has made its way into the laptop realm as well. That's not just a desktop motherboard problem, right? We still have the same problem with laptops. I shouldn't say problem, right? I mean, it increases some functionality. UEFI increases some functionality.
Yes.
But it also comes with some additional problems for you guys along modification rooms. Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, Kevin, one last thing maybe?
Actually, out in chat, somebody was asking about the NVX2 from HP. I'm a fan. I probably said it 4 or 5 times already. I'm kind of an HP fan. For the person out in chat was asking about that. I just was playing with one today. Office Depot seems to have them in stock. The X2 is an 11.6 screen, 1366 by 768. It's a split, so it looks like a small clamshell. The top pops off and acts as a tablet. All reviews are real positive on it. I think it first came out in the $700 type of price range. Most people have it on sale for $650 or $599. Here about a month or so ago, Staples was letting people combine a $100 off coupon, so it got down into the $550 kind of range. The drawbacks, or the apparent drawbacks, is it's an Atom-based processor, so it gets beat up a little bit for only having 2 gig of memory and being an Atom. But I encourage you to go buy an Office Depot, or I think Staples carries them as well. And if you play with it for a while, I'm pretty impressed with how well Windows 8 runs on 2 gig of memory and an Atom processor. If you're doing light compute and you want that experience of having a clamshell type device and a tablet freestanding, I think it's a pretty nice option. If I'm not mistaken, it also has Active Digitizer on it, so if you want to do pen entry, it tends to work very nice for that as well. So, like with any of these things, spend some time in the store, really work through them and look them over. But the X2 seems to be quite a value.
Maybe not a bad piece of equipment for an entry into this touchscreen, right? It sounds like it's got takes advantage of a lot of touchscreen features. So something to look at for sure.
Yep.
Okay, Paul, let's cut over to you. I know you've stacked up a bunch of, you've racked them and stacked them behind you, and you want to. You're going to cover just a smidge of history, but what do you got for us?
Yeah, Kevin, what he's talking about was just a great segue, and he's talking about 17-inch laptops, right? So if we talk about today and high horsepower, what I need for my job, it can mean a brick like this. I mean, the thing is pretty much brick size. This is a Lenovo W520 laptop with 3 drive bays. We'll talk about that. And, yeah, there's my phone. It's pretty large. Now, that's a pound and a half right there. And the laptop itself is still, I think, almost 6 pounds. But even sillier was that I flew around all over the country from 2008 to 2011 with a W700. That was a 17-inch behemoth. The thing is an inch and a half thick. I didn't have the pop-out screen on the side, which was an additional $700 and came out months later. But here's the point. Why did I fly around with that? A few key points. One, I was not using it on an airplane tray. I was using it for 10, 15 hours in a hotel room at night, and another 8 hours at a customer site with someone looking over my shoulder that needed a decent-sized screen. So you can start to see it makes sense. The next piece with a Road Warrior machine, as crazy as a huge laptop might seem, you know, those impromptu sessions where you have one other person looking at your screen, it really helps. But also, you're projecting and you're teaching a room full of 10 people something on Linux, for instance, using a virtual machine. You need performance. And having dual drive bays gave me a RAID 0, double the read-write speed for my D drive, my data drive, where my VMs lived. So you start to realize way before the days of SSD back in 2009, this is the kind of horsepower I needed for the work I was doing, consulting on the road, doing a virtualization work, VMware, Windows 2008 R2 deployments, that sort of thing. You really need the horsepower, you need the memory. And the size, the fact that it's an inch and a half thick and 9 pounds, just didn't matter. It's all in a wheeled cart that I wheeled through the airport with me. This thing has been everywhere, and I don't carry the weight of it. I'm just wheeling through the airport. Not a big deal.
Paul, did you find, though, but most places you go, if you tried to plug into a projector, that projectors still don't have great resolution in a lot of places that you go to.
Yep.
You get there and you try and show something, and it's just crap because...
Yeah, it's 1024768.
Week. Yeah.
My laptop can do 1920 by 1080, so you'd end up... Actually, 1920 by 1200, I think, on that one. So people would end up... if it was just 2 or 3 people, they just end up looking right at my screen to teach something. And everyone could read, you know, the command line commands I was typing, whatever. But you're right, it was always a challenge on a projector to try to do actual coding or editing a batch file or firmware deployment automation routines or this kind of stuff I was working on. But either way, having a 4 gig memory 32-bit machine made no sense. I was on Vista when it was beta. I was running it with the maxed DIMMs, and I was running 64-bit version. just so I could use VMware Workstation and actually have some horsepower, because I had no internet in many of these locations. I had to have all the grunt with me. This is just my story. It only made sense for me. I'm not saying it makes any sense for others.
Yeah, I see that a lot.
Each perspective is different.
Yeah. In the Oracle world that I live in, I see that a lot. The sales guys come in with these big beefy machines, and you're right. Yeah. They have to have VMs running on them and power, and so that's where that kind of footprint makes sense.
Now, an alternative perspective, let's go back to 1998 for a second. Anyone remember this little guy? See what happened there?
I love the way the keyboard just snapped out on you.
So, what's that called? It's called the Lenovo Butterfly, right? It was pretty ingenious keyboard. Watch. There you go. See? So, this thing actually is, I don't know, 14 years? And it still boots. So that's kind of fun.
What's it boot to?
You'll see momentarily.
Okay.
My point of showing this is we've got the red nub in there, the ThinkPad TrackPoint. Dell and HP still put them there for the corporate user. You got people used to these things for 15 years. Acceleration in the field has stayed the same those whole 15 years. That's kind of remarkable. Why do I point that out? Because trackpads still really stink at a lot of laptops, and they're inconsistent, different sizes and different positions. So, yes, I'm not saying I'd woo anyone over or win them over on learning a TrackPoint at this point because they're going away, but the point is, it's a good 15-year run. And, you know, it's pretty interesting that Dell and HP would throw them on theirs too. Okay, it's complaining my battery's a little old, of course. And we've got corrosion on the side where the battery ate through the shell a little bit. But it works, and there's your version of Windows.
Oh, look at that, ME.
Yep, so kind of remarkable that the hard drive, which you can hear making noise, is working, you know, 14 years later. So, yes, rugged is my point. These things are old. I've got a pile of them, and ThinkPad T30s, that distinctive cutoff corner. Why am I showing you this? That's, you know, mid-2000s, or actually early 2000s, because I've been spoiled by a 1400 by 1050 screen for a good decade. So it's really hard when I sit down and use someone's 1280 by 720 resolution netbook from 3 years ago. It makes me want to cry. I mean, this thing is 10 years old. I worked with developers in our software group back then. Developers, you need high-end stuff with decent screens. So now you kind of get a little sense of why I got excited last summer when for $450 I could buy a 27-inch 2560 by 1440 monitor. Finally. It's a long wait, but what a difference. So laptops and the docking station combined with them can be extremely productive in my office and not heat the whole room up. The whole shebang is run at about 200 watts. All three monitors, my light, my router, my gateway, my dock, my laptop, all for about 200 watts. Well worth it. That's one-third of what I was using with a single Deskside Xeon from 4 years ago. So that's the story I wanted to tell. I used a lot of hardware, and that's just my own story. I've got about a dozen laptops in my extended family that I support, and that my Windows Server 2012 Essentials backs up daily. Two-thirds of those machines are backing up over VPN nightly. And I tend to standardize in a particular model, so I have spare parts. When the warranty runs out, one breaks, I just move the keyboard off another one. Or the Wi-Fi module dies, move it from a dead one. I keep a boneyard of parts. So that's how I run my kind of home operations and try to keep my weekends
free from having to do tech support.
Correct. Having some spare parts and being able to back up and restore everything.
One of the notes that Kevin left in his notes, he said, sell your tech while it still has value. That pretty much goes against everything we're seeing there. Paul, you've held on to all your stuff. Is it kind of nostalgia or, I mean...
Yeah, no, this thing, a lot of them are dead. Yep. Yeah. Kind of nostalgia. That one's just amazing that it still works. I mean, if you look even further back, you have a good giggle about the screen size on that puppy.
Yeah.
There you go. Yeah. Look, you're looking back 15 years, like, you know, before
Christian was... Just kind of stacked in a corner?
Right around when Christian was born here. That's what we're looking at. Okay. So, yep. Little museum of sorts, and that's 2 inches thick, the early laptops.
Oh, good heavens.
So getting to focus on today, Jim, you asked.
Yeah.
Here's where things get interesting. How do you clone a Yoga? So think about that. It's got a UEFI BIOS. Boom, right there you got to go to Windows Server 2012 Essentials. 2011 doesn't do it, and it's a GPT partition. So all of a sudden you're looking at, you need new stuff. You need new techniques. It's a sealed case. You can't pull out the hard drive to clone it. And finally, it's Wi-Fi only. So when I got the Yoga, last Christmas for my son, is in high school doing homework right now. Hopefully it'll show up here in a moment to show you. That thing was a challenge to clone, but I need to clone things. I've been cloning them since 98, way back in the early Ethernet days. Like I said, saving weekends. Someone messes up their machine, I'm not going to mess around with all weekend. I'm just going to kick off a restore, come back when it's done, and hand it back to them from the day before when the backup was still good. So that mentality, I've been using home server since it came out, right? That was a huge blessing for me to have deduped backups and just drop Ghost and Acronis and all that stuff and just have one master backup server. But here's what I did. To get the Yoga to clone, took a few little bits and pieces. Item one, you have only one USB port on there. So what are you going to do? One USB 3.0 port, and you want decent speed. Here's the key, a little StarTAC device. In my website, one of my super, if you go to tinkertry.com, click on Super Guides, you'll see my Zillas, my T-Zilla, my V-Zilla, my Y-Zilla. Those are my laptops. They just have my nicknames for them. And a series of articles that goes over a lot of this stuff, including my initial experiences with Lenovo. Here, let me show that. So, Jim, here, I'll share out my desk quickly as I wrap this up. And it's got pictures and the exact parts. So I'm holding a StarTech.com part from Newegg and Amazon, and it allowed me to clone this very thin Yoga. And there was a lot of problems doing that because, for one, you need driver support. So suddenly I'm facing, will Windows Server 2012 Essentials let me get a driver going for the restore media? And again, there's no CD, so now we got the next piece, a USB 3.0 memory stick that we also had to deal with. You put these two things together, and you've run out of ports. So I'm like, okay, another $20, I think, got me this USB 3.0 splitter. And now this is my traveling restore disaster recovery rig. We got my USB 3 boot media that really cranks right along. UEFI can boot off of this just fine. That's my Windows Server 2012 Essentials restore media. And then you've got my gigabit Ethernet coming off the other side of this Y adapter. Now when you plug this Y adapter into the Yoga, you've got a self-contained boot target. You tell the UEFI BIOS to boot from it, and you boot off the boot media in seconds. You're looking at the Windows Server 2012 Essentials restore media. It finds the network adapter, and now you're gigabit restoring your solid-state drive.
Paul, hold that thing up lengthwise so we can see it all the way across. No, it's across the screen.
Yeah. Yep, there we go. So I went a little fast, but basically that's the key. Now, I got to admit, all my other machines, before they're under the Christmas tree or whatever the scenario is, or they're my dad's or whoever's in the family, I back them up and I do a test restore first. Not so much with the Yoga. I could only do a test restore to a virtual machine that was GPT formatted with its hard drive and a UEFI BIOS that was using ESXi 5.1, which Kevin knows about. So Kevin, my only way to rehearse it on a sealed laptop was to restore to a virtual machine that was very much like a Yoga. I wasn't going to go blowing away its hard drive just in case I nuked the partition or something went horribly wrong. But so far, Windows Server 2012 Essentials has never let me down. All the versions for the last 4 years, I've always had successful restores, where with Ghost and Acronis, 10-20% of the time it just dies in the middle for you, mysterious reasons with corruption. And now you're toast. So there's my story. A pile of laptops supporting them. The key was being able to back them up and make sure before I hand them over to anyone in the family that I can back it up and restore it. So hopefully that helped, Jim. That's my perspective on laptop ownership. Cool. No, trying to keep it simple.
That's a little more, and Kevin, I think I'm getting a little breathing from you. Careful there on your mic. I think that was you. If not, just everybody check their breathing. Everybody's like, am I still breathing? No, that's a great perspective, Paul, because that's a little more, you know, that's kind of like power backup and restore and Windows Home Server stuff. And I'm just intrigued, you know, that the components that you put together to make that work. You know, you've got a couple different components to pull it all together. So nice work. Any questions on that, guys? You got anybody want to jump in there and ask a question?
I think it's excellent that Paul goes through and he's prepared ahead of time and made sure that he can do a restore on any device he has before he passes it out to family members.
That is great.
Yeah, part of that is just, unlike yours, Jim, where your machines are super simple and cloud-based, a lot of these are legacy. They're a clone of their old machine that had 3 printers configured, Picasa with 10,000 photos, and a whole bunch of apps that they're just used to.
Right.
Just not cloud yet, and it's just a very painful, thick clients.
Yeah.
So basically just moving them from generation to generation. Since Windows Vista days, you can really pretty much boot on anything as long as it's a HCI BIOS in the hard drive partition that way, you're fine. Our device manager will find your parts and you just move on, moving the hard drive from laptop to laptop. But those days are over. The laptops are getting sealed. You're not moving physical hard drives from a laptop to another anymore. And that does make it trickier when things croak. Like a Yoga, which you're going to be overnight mailing for repairs, right? You're probably not going to be pulling out the SSD yourself by heading over to Best Buy and getting some parts.
And those are sealed? I guess I didn't realize that. That's
well,
sealed
you,
up.
Well, you can break it open, although I don't... Yeah, you can open it, although I am under a 3-year full warranty period, including damage protection, so you kind of give you pause, right?
Okay.
Normally, like right now, I have a laptop that's being serviced. I pull out everything, the hard drive, the giant battery from an old-style laptop, and then they just do their factory service. Now, perfect timing. You've got this essentially sealed design with almost no screws.
Tell him thank you, by the way.
Thank you. And here's the Yoga. Obviously, the thinness is pretty incredible. You know, 15 years should do a bit with the evolution of laptop size, right? But this is the fun part to show on a Yoga, right, is bending it backwards or breaking it, right? It looks horrible when you do that. I won't say it's been a perfect experience, and this just a quick mention of a few things in the Yoga. For me to get used to it, well, first of all, you have no track point. Touch surface is good, though. Keyboard layout, pretty rough because you got quite a bit of difference here with the inverted T, page up, page down. They made some major changes. To my dad, absolutely fine with that, although I'll point out a couple things, too. In the top row, you've got keys where a single tap of this key right here will just turn off Wi-Fi and put it in airplane mode. Not great. Windows 8 will say you've done that, but of course now you have a brick that can't get on the LAN until you fix it. A key right next to it blanks out the monitor. That's not so good. The laptop screen just goes off. You think you just broke your laptop or powered it on, even though it's on. So some of those usability things, the BIOS lets you tweak it so you have to hit function before any of those keys work. It's like, okay, there, I just dad-proofed it. So that with a little bit of work, it works for, you know, 3 generations. My son and my dad both have these. It's gone extremely well. They're both fine with it. Rotation has been the biggest bug. A little bit goofy. Sometimes the desktop machine will auto-rotate, so I ended up just disabling it. Because my dad's using it as a laptop almost all the time, rarely as a tablet.
I just saw it switch on you there when you turned it.
Yeah, you did.
Yeah.
For the most part, it's been pretty good. But a little strange that Lenovo's taking their sweet time to update the drivers. Usually when a laptop's new, and Christian knows this, the BIOS flash, like on Lenovo's, you'll get 2 or 3 that first year. Well, this thing hasn't had updates since October, the Yoga. And with a somewhat buggy pivot driver, that's a little bit weird, but I'm sure they'll fix it. And Kevin, you mentioned fan speed. There's already talk in the forums they'll be tweaking it. It makes a little bit of noise, maybe more than I would like, and it runs awfully cool. I'm kind of thinking the next BIOS flash on this one might lower the fan a little bit because it makes just a bit more noise than I would have expected. So there you go. That's a quick overview. I've got a full article about it. Again, if you go to tinkertry.com/Zilla, that's it. Hit enter, and you'll see all my different laptops and desktops kind of documented with some pictures.
Very cool. I think a great resource. A great resource to if you really want to dive in. And Paul, I know you've got a lot of detailed articles out there. You don't cover anything halfway. So if you're going to write about it, you're going all the way in. You're going to talk about everything. So some good resources out there. So if you haven't checked that out, if you've been listening to the show for a while and you haven't checked that out, you really do want to go out there and take a peek. Tinkertry.com.
Any questions before I give it back to homework duty here? A little bit of lag in the screen you're seeing. So I think
Paul,
some more left.
Yep. In a couple weeks, I said we're going to have Mike Howard back on. He's going to have his Yoga. You might want to either jump in on that or because we're going to spend a bunch of time talking about his Yoga. So that might be a good time to circle back around and talk about that as well.
Okay. Thank you, Jim.
All right, you bet. John, we didn't want to think we left you out there. I know you probably approach laptops from a more average guy standpoint, both Paul and and Kevin are a little more technical and into their laptops. Am I correct in assuming that you're more of just the average guy user?
I think I'm pretty average compared to Paul and Kevin, yes.
talk a little bit about your usage.
Well, I put in the show notes one of my a link to a paper I wrote on my first upgrade of my laptop. But I came to laptops, personal laptops, pretty late in the game. I've always been a desktop man, but at work when I needed a laptop, I would just check one out, and I was never really that impressed with them because they were always several years old, and they were slow, and they were heavy. And then when my son Brian went to college, and he wanted a laptop instead of a desktop, so we got him a Dell, and he really enjoyed that. And after he got out of college, he started collecting some other devices, and also at work they gave him machines to work with too. But he had a NetTop, and I really liked the size of the NetTop.
Netbook?
Or a netbook, yeah. I said NetTop.
Yeah, I get that. I'd say that too. So
yeah. So I really like the size, and I think the way I approached it is, I think, a good way for a lot of people to approach it. Go out and try different machines and see what you like. I won't belabor the point because you had talked about it before. Kevin had made a good point, and you have made a good point. Those giant 17-inch machines with the 17-inch screens are just, you know, those things are huge. And now when you go through TSA checkpoints, I mean, it's just impossible with all that hardware because you got to pull it all out. I liked his machine. It was nice and small, portable, but I wanted something with a little bit more power. I didn't want a kind of dumbed down version of Windows 7 on it. So I looked around and I did a lot of searching. I probably spent at least 6 to 9 months looking, and I finally settled onto an Acer 1810T. And it has I got links in the show notes, so I assume you'll be posting those in the notes afterwards. And the 1810T now is just if you go to Newegg, it's discontinued. It's not being carried by them anyway. But it was a nice machine. I won't go through all the specs, but it had 4 gig on stock. It had a 320 Western Digital Blue hard drive in it. What was nice, though, what I really liked, it had an 11.6-inch screen, and it was about 3 pounds. And for me, I mean, that was magic. Looking at some of the specs on it, and it had a Core Dual U7300. It's a 1.3 gigahertz CPU. It's 10 watts. If you look at the Passmark scores, benchmark scores on it, it comes out at about the same score as an N40L that they have in the microservers. I didn't realize that it did, but for the things that I've been doing with it, it's been a very powerful machine. I run Office 2013 Pro on it, and I also have my SkyDrive and Dropbox on it, and I have a number of other miscellaneous programs that I run quite a bit. And it's a great machine. It's good for taking around. And it's light. It has, especially now with the SSDs that I put into it, when I switched out the spinner drive, the hard drive, I got a little bit more battery life out of it. And so it meets my needs. And I think I put in the show notes when I was telling you, if I could change on it, I'd like to put a Haswell in it.
Which means what? What does that get for you?
The Haswell chips, the CPUs are going to be run a little bit cooler and have a little bit more power. And so that would give me more battery life. If everything else was the same and you just put a Haswell into here, I think I would have more runtime, and it would be cooler, and I think I would be happy. Now, a touch screen on it, it's, you know, 11.6-inch screen, that's roughly the same as an iPad, and if that was a touch screen, then I think the machine, this little laptop would be perfect, and I have it right here. Since we're having a show and tell, if I can...
yeah, you're good. I've got you in focus, so we're seeing it now.
I don't know if you can... I'm trying to get it in front of the monitor here. You can see it's pretty thin, and it's... this is the area right here that where I changed out the hard drive and put in the SSDs. The paper that I wrote, I initially the first SSD I put into it was a Crucial, and which was a pretty nice SSD, but I wanted to use that in another build, so I put a Corsair GT into it, and that was a little bit faster reads and writes. And at the after that, too, I loaded Windows 8 Pro onto it, the 64-bit version, and Windows Media Center. And then, like I said, I put Office 2013 on it. And I love it. Windows 8 on it works real well. The only thing, and I think it's a problem with a lot of laptops, or at least, is with this, when you open it up, and you have a touchpad here at the bottom of the keyboard. And if you're typing on it, and if you accidentally hit that touchpad while you're typing, your cursor will jump over the screen. What I use...
It'll do wicked things. I hate that.
Yeah, and I thought about trying to just disable that touchpad, but there's times when I do like to use it.
You kind of need it. So,
and what I use, though, mostly is just a Microsoft Bluetooth mouse, and that works real well. I like
that the little 5000.
Yeah,
M5000. Yeah, those are nice. Those are kind of industry standard, I think, for Bluetooth.
Yeah, and I just picked up a simple case. I got it at Newegg, and pretty much just bought it on price. It's just a neoprene outside. Bought a case for the mouse. And in the front, it has like a zipper pocket. That's where I keep additional or extra USB sticks and hardware. And then I have a like a small backpack that my wife got me. It's a Samsonite that I can. I have all my gear. I have a. I think I put in the show notes. When I travel, I you know, besides my power brick that I have. See, Paul was showing you all kinds of stuff. I got to show you my stuff, too. Besides the power brick that I take with me, I have a single terabyte drive, hard drive, that I load a bunch of movies and videos and stuff on for, you know, just watching. When I'm out on the road, I can also keep data on that.
What's the brand?
It's a Western Digital. It's a Western Digital Elements, 1 terabyte. I don't know, are you going to be copying some of the stuff from the show notes into,
oh, absolutely.
Into your notes? Yep, okay, absolutely. So that information's in there.
Okay, good.
And also another thing that I travel with that I've used is something that I used before I got this thing, this blue thing. I don't know if you remember the
it's the blue headphones. Yeti.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm being funny. we had talked about it before. I don't know if that was in the
no, that didn't make
must
the show.
Have been pre-show. No. Yeah.
It's
okay.
Pre-show work. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
You got to get here early if you want to hear the good talk. Yeah. If you want to hear the good banter, you got to get to the show early.
But yeah, I take with me, and it has. Okay, can I get this on here? Yeah.
Just back it up a smidge. There you go.
There you go. It has my microphone and headphone set that I can attach, and I can make Google Hangout calls and Skype type calls. And then in my one of the things that I had liked about this laptop that I didn't mention before, and I had gotten the laptop. It's fairly old, actually. I had gotten it before I'd really gotten too much into HTPCs, and I liked the fact that the laptop had an HDMI port on it. That I experimented before I got an HTPC, plugging in an HDMI cable into my laptop and then into our big screen TV, and we actually used that a lot of times to go onto the internet and do video streaming off the internet. A lot of times, Big Ten, if they have games, they'll have several games on TV, but then they'll have additional games that you can get on their network and stream them off. And I did that with the laptop. So in my travel case, I keep an HDMI cable, sort of where someplace and there's something that's being streamed, some sporting event or something, and we want to watch it, but it's not on the local channel. I can just plug the laptop into the TV, and we can watch it. So it's a versatile little tool in that respect, too.
Yeah, you know, you brought up the bag, the Samsonite bag. We could do a whole show probably around the bags that we use to carry our stuff, because it's not just about having the gear. You got to have all the gear with you, right? And it's not about just the laptop. I mean, I think we've seen here, it's not about just the laptop, but I would imagine if we asked, I imagine if I asked you guys, okay, list out, inventory out everything you carry with you when you travel, right? There's extra Ethernet cables, there's some flash drives, there's some video, you know, there's some extra video cables, right? I mean, we keep, you know, and ask me, you know, don't ask me why I've got this cable sitting on my desk, but